From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up yesterday, an Obama appointee to a New York District Court struck down the Trump administration's conscience regulations. Regulations that would protect doctors, nurses, and other health care providers from being forced to provide abortions and other medical services on religious or moral grounds. District Judge Paul Engelmeyer said the rule was unconstitutionally coercive and arbitrary and capricious. And just a short while ago, another Obama judicial appointee, this one from Washington State, also ruled against the Trump administration. Congressman Roger Marshall, a doctor from Kansas and a member of Congress, who has been an outspoken defender of conscience rights, the unborn, and religious freedom, is here in a moment with more. Also, our own legal team and policy experts will break down this decision from these two courts, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy, and Katherine Johnson, FRC's research fellow, will join me a little bit later to analyze these court decisions and talk about where the administration may go from here. And another example of the tech giants controlling the social media space, censoring conservative speech. This time, once again, it's YouTube. What triggered the Ministry of Truth, to borrow a Newspeak term, to censor an entire video? One sentence by a medical doctor about the transgender issue as it related to children. What was that one sentence? I'll talk about it with Katrina Trinko, Director and Editor-in-Chief of the Daily Signal. That's coming up a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Also, another one of the Trump administration's rules protecting religious freedom has the left in a tizzy. A week ago today, the administration announced protections of faith-based adoption agencies who desire to operate according to their beliefs and biblical teaching. Opponents claim the rule will deprive LGBTQ individuals from adopting. But the reality is much different. I'll talk about it with Harold Harper, FRC's Senior Vice President and Chief of Staff, who went through a faith-based adoption to adopt a boy named Josiah from China. We'll talk about it later here on Washington Watch. A lot to cover. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything on your way home tonight, you can find it all later, archived at TonyPerkins.com. Also, information about some upcoming events, including a trip to Israel coming up in June. If you'd like to go with us, there's more about how you can join us for that lifetime, a trip of a lifetime. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, as I mentioned, a federal judge yesterday voided the Trump administration's conscience rule that would have allowed health care providers to refuse to participate in abortions, sterilizations, or other types of care they disagree with based upon religious or moral grounds. These are procedures that are not necessarily medically necessary. U.S. District Judge Paul Engelmeyer in Manhattan declared the Health and Human Services rule unconstitutional in a 147-page decision that said it was, quote, shot through with glaring legal defects, end quote. The rule had been set to go into effect on the 22nd of this month. And as I mentioned just hours ago, another Obama appointee, this one in Washington State, joined the attack on the administration. Joining me now is Dr. Roger Marshall, congressman who represents the 1st District of Kansas. He serves on the Agriculture Committee as well as the Science, Space, and Technology Committee. And I should note that he has delivered over 5,000 babies as a medical doctor. Dr. Marshall, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me back on. It's just another day that our freedoms, our values are being attacked, our constitutional freedoms being attacked. Why is it that everyone's freedoms are protected except Christians? Why are we being persecuted like this in today's world?
Well, I want to address this as a healthcare provider. I mean, you spent you're really on your second career after serving as right. a doctor, as I mentioned, delivered over 5,000 babies. I mean, this almost what we're seeing increasingly, and it's not just in medical. I mean, I'm going to talk a little bit later about the adoption agencies, but right. medical in particular. I mean, are medical providers, you know, mindless bots without moral concerns or constraints? I mean, are they to do what they're told to do by the patient?
Well, of course not. We're people as well. And, you know, I chose a residency program so that it did not do abortions. So I wouldn't have these types of pressures having to deal with it on a day-in and day-out basis. But unfortunately, not every nurse and every physician gets to work in a location that that doesn't do those types of procedures. And more, it's just on abortions, it's sterilization procedures, it's sex change type of procedures that a healthcare worker may object to say, look, I don't think that this is morally right. And President Trump was trying to help us out here and give us some more protections. But now one of the Obama-era judges has basically torn that up and thrown it away and said, no, we're not going to give Christians the same type of rights and protections as other people are.
Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about this more with our policy team. But what the president was doing here was simply following through with statutory authority in terms of upholding conscience rights. So it wasn't like he was creating anything out of whole cloth. He's simply doing what's already out there on the statutes. I mean, President Bush did this. Obama, you know, reversed it. He's doing the same thing that previous presidents have done, and they weren't attacked by the courts. It's just fascinating to me. Every action this president takes, you have a district-level judge that is stepping in to enjoin and stay these policies nationwide.
Right, Tony. There's a theme here. Under President Obama's administrations, our values, our freedoms as Christians were being attacked constantly. Then President Obama nominates liberal judges, and now President Trump is trying to undo those rules. And thank goodness President Trump, I believe, has confirmed now 158 conservative judges. That's really important. But meanwhile, you and I, FRC, and our staffs are going to have to get to work and figure out some legislation to protect Christians who want to practice medicine, whether it's nurses or doctors or surgical techs, those types of folks as well.
Dr. Marshall, give our listeners just kind of a sense as a medical professional, a medical provider, the type of things that medical personnel might be forced into. You mentioned you chose a residency program that did not include abortions. But what if they came to you and said, if you want to pass and you want to become a doctor, you're going to have to perform an abortion?
Right. So most residency programs teach residents how to do abortions, and many of the national organizations are requiring them to do that. So there's more and more pressure to learn those types of procedures. And I got to tell you, what I'm really concerned about now is all this sex change. That was really uncommon when I was going to medical school and in training, but there seems to be more and more pressure for doctors to be performing sex change operations, and even on minors. So this is becoming a pretty loud drumbeat out there. We haven't talked about euthanasia yet, some of those types of issues as well. So we better be careful here. This is indeed one of those slippery slopes.
And when you talk, Congressman Marshall, about the slippery slope, one of my big concerns, and my daughter is actually a nurse, one of my big concerns, but she went through a Catholic, a faith-based school, university, and is working in a faith-based hospital. But my concern is that if we do not provide protections for people of moral conviction, that they will choose another profession. And that so we will lose out on having kind, compassionate, caring people motivated by their faith from working in these critical fields.
Exactly. And unfortunately, more and more healthcare providers are being bullied into doing these types of procedures. And what the president was trying to do was give us some of those protections. There's enough pressures to not become a doctor or a nurse right now. Because of Obamacare and all the regulations and all those things going on, we don't need a moral fiber keeping us from doing it as well. So that would be a sad, sad day. Very sad.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Dr. Marshall, Roger Marshall, congressman from Kansas, my guest. We're discussing two court decisions, one yesterday, one today, striking down the Trump administration's conscience protection rules. Actually, back in 2008, right before the end of President Bush's term, he put in place these conscience rules. shortly after President Obama took office. He reversed them, same means, same method, to just basically eliminate these protections for health care providers. Dr. Marshall, you mentioned the issue of sex change and LGBT issues. One of the articles I read about this said critics have said that the rule could deprive gay, transgender, and other patients of needed health care because some providers might deem them less worthy of treatment. Now, when I read that, that jumped off the page for me because I've never heard of a case, and I want to ask you if you have, encountered where someone was denied medically necessary treatment because of their orientation or anything of that nature.
Of course not. I couldn't even imagine being in an emergency room and asking a patient what their religion was, what their sexual orientation was. I mean, I want to know, do you smoke? Do you, what your allergies are? Do you, what medical problems do you have? And it would just be real unusual for that to become an issue in any way, unless it puts you at some increased risk for certain health problems. So of course not. I'm just flabbergasted, to be honest, just absolutely flabbergasted. If it's an urgent treatment, we're going to take care of you. In the emergency room, you call us. I mean, just think of all these great doctors and nurses who have dedicated their lives out here across America. And now there's one more reason to not become a doctor, not to become a nurse.
And those are the very people we want in these professions, people who are motivated not for a paycheck, that are motivated out of a compassion for their human fellow human being that is deeply rooted, really, in their faith. I know that's why my daughter chose that profession. And so I think it's extremely important that we protect the very thing that is leading men and women into this critical area of service.
You know, absolutely. Next to salvation and the message of salvation, I think one of the greatest things a Christian can do is to use the talents that God has given us to be in the healthcare field and to approach healthcare. That God has given me certain talents and certain opportunities, and how can I use that? And how can I involve my faith for better outcomes and praying with people and all those things that I think a strong Christian doctor and nurse help bring to the healing situation, way more than just a scalpel and some medicines.
All right, Dr. Roger Marshall, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to continue to draw focus to this because I think it is a critical issue for both patients and for healthcare providers. Thanks so much for taking time out to join us.
Absolutely, Tony. We'll keep fighting the fight together. Thanks so much for keep highlighting all these issues.
Absolutely. Congressman Roger Marshall of Kansas, great American. All right, when we come back, I'm going to be joined by some of FRC's experts, legal and policy experts. We're going to talk about the various aspects of these decisions, but also some of the remedies. There are a couple of measures before Congress. Dr. Andy Harris, another medical doctor who's in Congress, represents Maryland. He has a measure with 89 co-sponsors. The problem is the majority is not for this in the House. Elections have consequences. We're going to talk about that and what the administration may do as a result of these two court decisions. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Clausen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn. Meadow Pollock was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollock, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most important yet misunderstood issues in America. There's a growing perception that protecting religious liberty is an attempt to lawfully allow bigotry and prejudice. Therefore, Christians need to be able to articulate with greater clarity and persuasiveness why they support religious liberty. Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, is a new publication from Family Research Council that presents biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to engage in the fight to preserve America's first freedom. This publication presents key biblical texts that support a broad understanding of religious freedom and key theological arguments based on those texts. In an increasingly secular world, Christians must understand and advocate for religious liberty. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, we were talking about the federal judge out of New York who yesterday struck down the Trump administration's conscience rule. As I mentioned earlier today, another federal district court judge. It's important to note these are district court judges. These are lower court judges. Usually their decisions only pertain to their jurisdictions. They don't have nationwide jurisdiction, but in this case, they're exercising it. Striking down this conscience protection rule by the administration. Now, some say, oh, it's not necessary. Well, if you get my daily update, which I encourage you to do, you can go to tonyperkins.com, follow the links over. Just get our Stand Firm app and download that, and you'd get this every day. But I write about this. There's a nurse out of Vermont. This was one of the complaints, if you will, filed with HHS, which the judge said doesn't exist. The judge in New York said these are made. Well, let's see what I'm trying to see what he actually said, his actual words, but essentially said that these complaints don't exist, that it's factually untrue, these conscience concerns. Well, a nurse in Vermont, she scrubbed in like she usually did. Their patient, she was told, had just lost her baby. It was supposed to be a routine procedure, the kind that you usually perform after a miscarriage. Turns out, nothing about the procedure was routine. When she met the doctor, he had an apologetic look in his eye, and he says, now please don't hate me, he said. The woman's baby, the nurse discovered, hadn't died. They were there to actually kill the baby. Shocked, the nurse turned and asked to be relieved. The answer was no. Faced with losing her job, she did something that traumatized her, and she's lived with it ever since. She helped abort an innocent child. That's the type of medical provider that would be protected under this rule. Joining me now to talk about these two decisions and where the administration may go from here is Travis Weber, FRC's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs, and Catherine Johnson's FRC's Research Fellow for Legal and Policy Studies. Travis and Catherine, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, let's start. We don't have anything written out of Washington State. It was just an announcement from the bench that a written opinion would be forthcoming, so let's just stick with the one out of New York. 147 pages. It looked more like a rant than an opinion.
Tony, I think this result clearly is indicative of the types of rulings that we're seeing from judges who simply are doing whatever they can to stop President Trump's policies. I mean, that's really how we boil it down. But I do know that there are some real problems with the reasoning. And Catherine can share on those because there are some significant problems here, too.
That's right. The judge found that HHS's justification for the rule, which was a significant increase in civilian complaints, was, quote, factually untrue. And how he got to this conclusion was by throwing out a lot of the complaints that were filed with HHS. For example, the Little Sisters of the Poor filed a complaint. There was also a man who worked at a prison that didn't want to give out hormone therapy for the prisoners, yet was forced to. Another pharmacist didn't want to prescribe birth control. So there were a lot of complaints here that the judge was finding a way to dismiss any way he can, saying this doesn't actually apply or what have you. And HHS was very clear in making it clear that these cases illustrate exactly the problems that are going on for people of faith in these fields.
Let me start with, I got a few questions here. First, it was a point that I made in the opening here, that we're seeing this trend where district court judges, and we've got there's a whole bevy of district court judges out there. In fact, this district court judge, Engelmeyer, was approved 98-0. Not a whole lot of attention is ever paid to district court judges because they don't have decisions that are binding. And so nobody really pays much attention to them when they come through the process. I think that's wrong, but that's the case. Why is it that we're seeing this trend of district court judges, instead of just having opinions that affect the areas that they have jurisdiction over, are now exercising nationwide authority?
Tony, I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier about judges just trying to stop policies they don't like. It's the usual activist judge problem that we've seen in the past, where they are doing whatever they can to implement their policy views in the law. And this is why President Trump's nominees are so important. I mean, this goes back to the whole story of why it's so important that his appointees take these roles, because they're interpreting the law according to the cases before them. As originalists and textualists, they're not reading things into the law. It's very important that we preserve the integrity of our system with these types of nominees.
And to add on to that, the importance of Trump's nominees, the Second Circuit, which is where this case would be appealed to from the district court in New York, is actually currently has 6 Democrat and 6 Republican appointees. And there's one nominee, Menasche, who was just the Senate filed cloture today on him, and that would make it 7 Republican nominees to 6 Democratic nominees. So that once again highlights the importance of this president's nominees.
Yeah, in fact, I think with the confirmation of that judge to the Second Circuit, 1 out of every 4 circuit court judges will have been nominated by President Trump and confirmed by the Senate majority, which is the most any president has done in their first term since 1980, when Jimmy Carter actually flooded the courts, expanding it with judges. So that is a milestone, but it also shows that this administration is very serious about pursuing this. Let me ask you this question about I mentioned this with Dr. Marshall. Now, we're up against a break. I'm going to ask you all to hold on just a second, because we're going to come back on the other side of the break. I want to finish this. This is an important issue. I think people need to understand how this administration is advancing religious freedom, sanctity of life, all of these things we care so deeply about, being confronted at every turn by activist judges. But at the same time, they're also pursuing that long-term game of putting judges on the bench who will abide by the Constitution. All of that is the result of elections and who we put in office. And I just hope, folks, I hope you're paying attention to what's happening in America. And, you know, it's overused, the term crossroads. I don't think we're at a crossroads. I think we're dangling by a thread over a raging fire. And we can't avoid the responsibility before us. Don't go away. We're coming back after this.
The topic of sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it's something that needs to be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, specifically addresses sexual sin and the susceptibility of those in church leadership. He discusses the contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. The principles found in this publication will instruct leaders in meeting their emotional, relational, and even sexual needs in healthy ways so that there will be less of a foothold for temptation. Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure is a must-read for everyone involved in church ministry. To read the publication and learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard. That's frc.org/safeguard.
Are you a parent of a school-aged child? If so, then you understand that navigating your educational system is one of the biggest challenges facing families across the United States today. Family Research Council's new publication titled The SPLC's Teaching Tolerance, What Parents, Teachers, and Administrators Need to Know, helps parents identify and monitor a specific agenda that is being pushed on their children in public schools. The highly partisan left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the greatest offenders on this front with their program titled Teaching Tolerance. This program is designed to infiltrate schools with radically progressive education resources that undermine Christian values about marriage and family. FRC's brochure outlines the content within the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Project and empowers parents to protect their children against the SPLC's agenda. Learn more at frc.org/teachingtolerance. That's frc.org/teachingtolerance.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. If you happen to miss any of the program on your way home, you can find it all later there, archived. In fact, share it with your friends. I mean, this is information unfiltered by the media. We're taking you to the newsmakers and bringing this information so you can act upon it. All right, we're talking about the president's, the Trump administration's, conscience protection rule that were announced, and then yesterday a federal judge, district judge in New York, stepped in, blocked it, and then today one out of Washington State. All right, I'm going to go back to Travis and Catherine. Let me ask you this. This is – what authority here is President Trump using that President Bush – used and Obama used? I mean, what's the difference? I mean, Bush, in the waning days of his administration, put conscience rules in place in 2008. Obama came in, used the same authority, and undid them. What's different about what Trump's doing?
Tony, you know, there is no difference in terms of the statutory authority that all three administrations have relied upon. And this really is an important point for people who want to dig beneath the spin and false claims in the news media. People need to see that all three administrations are relying on the same statutory protections for conscience that are in our law. They're all relying on it. We didn't hear any of these complaints when President Obama was protecting this, though quite minimally. He was still protecting current law because he had to under current law, enforcing that. President Trump has expanded the enforcement, made it more robust, and made sure that we're actually going to follow through and hold these entities and others to account for failing to protect conscience. That's the difference here. And that's what this conscience rule does that the judges have blocked. It's not something cut from new cloth. It's a enforcement of current law. He's following through and doing his job in enforcing this law authorized by statute that Presidents Bush and Obama did, though much more minimally, with less fanfare. And so, you know, people have really no basis to really complain about what's going on now. This is simply a longstanding enforcement of conscience protections that have been in our law and are perfectly constitutional.
So what remedies do the administration have available to them? Where do they go from here?
Well, I think it's very reasonable to expect that they're going to appeal this. As I said, these are constitutional. They have a basis in statute. The administration through HHS is simply enforcing the law here. So we're going to see some appeals up through the federal appeals courts, probably to the U.S. Supreme Court. Unfortunately, the administration now is distracted once again by judges just trying to throw wrenches in the spokes here because they don't like these policies. And that's really the story that we've seen before, and it's what we're continuing to see here.
All right. Before I let you and Catherine go, Travis, you know, we focus a lot on these policies, and I started by talking about a Vermont nurse that was forced to be a part of abortion. But we talk about the policies, but these are really about people.
They are. You know, Tony, we talked about the story of the Vermont nurse. This whole need for conscience protections goes back to the story of Kathy DiCarlo, a nurse a number of years ago was forced into participating in an abortion against her conscience when she had an agreement with her hospital that she would not participate. Yet they forced her into this situation anyway under threat of discipline, forcing her to participate in taking the life of a baby in all of its gruesome horror. This is what people need to keep in mind as we think about who we want in elected office. Do we want officials like President Trump who are protecting these individuals? Or do Christians want they and everyone else who does not want to be complicit in this horror to be forced against their conscience to participate in it? There are many out there who will happily force everyone to participate in abortion and other activities against their consciences. We need to remember these stories because they're the practical element that brings these policies into bear when we think about how they affect real people. They are the stories of people that we need to keep in mind.
Yeah, and I also want to point out, just I will later when I talk with Harold Harper, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council, there are those that say, well, then these individuals can't get what they need. They can't get the abortion. That's not true. There are those who, I disagree with it, but there are those who are out there that will provide the abortion. There are those that are out there that will completely go through the process of destroying a human body through these sex change operations. They'll do those things, but they shouldn't force someone who doesn't want to participate in it to be a party to it.
Exactly. There is no reason for that because this is about conscience protection. There are others who will participate in the process. And just like we talked about the other day with the protections for adoption providers that recently came out, there are entities that will adopt children into homes with LGBT families, yet Christians don't want to be implicated in that. We're asking for people to be protected against being forced into things that violate their conscience and the way they want to live their faith out in their lives.
Right. It's not about denying anybody anything. It's about preventing individuals from being forced to do things that they have moral and spiritual objections to. Catherine, Travis, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, to find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, yes, big tech at it again, censoring conservative speech. A medical doctor spoke the truth in one sentence about the transgender issue related to children, and YouTube censored the entire video. Katrina Trinko, director and editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal, joins me when we return. Then we'll also check in with Harold Harper a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. A lot more still to come. News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting WashingtonTimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's WashingtonTimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. YouTube has censored a video published by the Daily Signal at the Heritage Foundation because of one sentence, spoken by a well-respected pediatrician who addressed her concerns about children and gender identity and gender issues. Dr. Michelle Critella, the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians, and she is one that's been on this program many times, she made a statement, and because of the one sentence she said, the video was censored. It was taken off of YouTube. Joining me now is Katrina Trinko, director and editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Katrina, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. I mean, we're seeing this trend increasingly of certain politically incorrect speech being denied, you know, the public platform. Is essentially what it is. I think even increasingly these social media firms themselves are saying that they are a part of the public square, but they want to pick what can be said and what cannot be said.
Yeah, and we were very concerned in this instance because we saw that Dr. Michelle Critella's video, which has over 70 million views on Facebook, it's one of our most popular, was taken down by YouTube in July. We hadn't gotten a notice. We're not sure when. We then worked behind the scenes with YouTube for months, and we said, hey, you know, we understand you're a private company. We respect that. You have the right to have your own rules, but we really think that this is a targeting of conservatives you don't want to do. Can we, you know, can we reach some kind of, you know, understanding on this? And as you said, they ultimately came to us and said the video could not be put back on YouTube unless we removed a particular sentence that essentially Dr. Critella said that someone asked to remove an arm or a leg, they're seen as mentally ill. If they asked to remove genitalia, we say, congrats, you're transgender. And they said that that line, which did not include congrats, that's my sarcastic addition, that line violated their hate speech policy.
That one line. If you would take out that line, they would publish or they would allow the video to be on their platform.
Yes, and it was incredible because I did some research, and this video was originally published, including on YouTube, in December of 2017. It was only this May that the World Health Organization moved transgenderism, they stopped classifying it as a mental illness. So this is really, I mean, this is not Dr. Cretella. Some people disagree with her. She is nonetheless a pediatrician of, I believe, 20 years experience. What she was saying was certainly not out of line with medical understanding for much of history. And yet that thing is so offensive. YouTube cannot even let it be said.
Yeah, let me just read the sentence without the sarcasm that you added. But let me just read it so our folks know exactly what we're talking about here. And this is, as you pointed out, Dr. Cretella is a well-recognized professional. She's been on this program many times. She said, see, if you want to cut off a leg or an arm, you're mentally ill. But if you want to cut off healthy breast or a penis, you're transgender. What's untrue about that statement?
I think, obviously, there's controversy. Should transgenderism and gender dysphoria be seen as a mental illness? But that should not be something that a major tech company will not let be said on its platform. You know, we are living in a time where parents are being pressured by the schools and others to make all these decisions about their kids, whether they should put them on puberty blockers and all this kind of stuff that has very real and enduring ramifications. That goes from infertility to, you know, anytime you're modifying the body in this way, there are consequences. And parents are being asked to make these decisions. And the last thing that, you know, one of these big tech companies or anyone should be doing is censoring voices. We need to have access to the facts here. And I'm afraid what's happening is liberals are pressuring YouTube as well as the other companies, and they're trying to get anything that they don't like. They can't argue against it, so they say it's hate speech.
Right, and that's the dangerous thing. Anything they cannot argue against, they label hate speech, and they say, oh, hate speech is not allowed. So is there any way forward with YouTube on this, or is that decision final?
It appears it's final. We went through basically the highest court of appeals in YouTube land you can, but we are hoping, and I ask your listeners, if they're upset about it, please tweet at YouTube, leave them a Facebook message. We'd really like them to understand that, you know, often the right, we're not as loud and as noisy and as quick to complain as the left, but we exist, and we think that Dr. Cretella should be able to speak freely.
Yeah. My concern about the judicial system in YouTube land is kind of like the FISA courts. You never know what's happening behind the scenes.
That is for sure true.
Katrina, thanks so much for joining us, and we certainly will encourage people to weigh in, because this is a troubling trend that we see increasingly, not with just with YouTube, but with many of these social media giants. Thanks so much for all you guys do. We appreciate Daily Signal and the work that you do.
Thank you. We love FRC.
All right. Thanks so much, Katrina. Katrina Trinko, director and editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. And they're a good source, by the way. A lot of people ask, hey, where do you get your information? Where can I get trustworthy information? That's one, Daily Signal. We've got several we have here on the program that are good. They're one of them. So check out. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow links over. All right, last week, the end of last week, the Trump administration, again, an example of this administration doing what they said they were going to do, protecting the religious beliefs, rights of conscience, whatever you want to call it, for adoption agencies. There's been a trend since the whole redefinition of marriage and all this sexual confusion that's been sown into society that faith-based adoption agencies have been forced out of business because they wouldn't place children with same-sex couples or, you know, people that not necessarily couples, it could just be anybody. And they prefer, because based upon their beliefs, but also the social science, which is overwhelming, that children do best when they're placed with a married mom and dad. Now, that's the facts. That's the science. It's out there. Here's I want to play this clip. Because back the Trump administration first took a narrow ruling in a Miracle Hill adoption agency case in South Carolina, essentially the same regulation they put out last week, protecting the rights of conscience for these adoption providers. This is Senator Ron Wyden of Wyoming and his response to it. Listen to this.
The Trump administration gave its stamp of approval for taxpayer-funded discrimination. Potentially wonderful parents will be turned away because they are LGBTQ parents. This South Carolina decision makes clear that the Trump administration would rather green-light discrimination over the...
That, my friends, is absolutely untrue. No one is deprived of the ability to adopt. If someone wants to adopt, if a same-sex couple wants to adopt, or a homosexual, LGBT person, whatever you want to call them, wants to adopt a child, they can go to a secular adoption agency and do it. What actually, here's the truth, and what the administration recognizes is that many couples want to adopt through a faith-based organization. And you have, as we were talking about earlier, about medical providers who are driven by, motivated by their faith and want to do what is best for children, are in this business. And you have adoptive mothers who give their babies up for adoption, choose adoption knowing that they can direct where their children might go through a faith-based adoption agency. That's the truth. And faith-based agencies out, guess what? You have fewer people and entities that will help place children, and you have fewer options for children. That, my friends, is the truth. Joining now to talk more about this is Harold Harper, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and Chief of Staff. Earlier I said Executive Vice President, Senior Vice President here, and is an adoptive father himself. He and his wife adopted a little boy from China through a faith-based adoption agency, little Josiah, who is a blessing to many. Harold, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, you're a frequent listener, so now you're a frequent guest. You've been on many times, but let's talk about this. I want to, from your standpoint, as you, your family pursued an adoption and going through a faith-based, I mean, you were motivated out of your faith.
Absolutely. We were motivated by our church, our local church. You know, our pastor spoke on this. Our church was really big on challenging all of us to step out, obey God. He invited Mary Beth and Stephen Curtis and Mary Beth Chapman to come and speak to our ladies at our church. It was a ladies' event. And many of our listeners probably know about that horrific story where they lost one of their adopted children in an accident. And it was the first time that Mary Beth was working on her book at the time. She was about to go on tour and promote the book. She came and spoke at our church. My wife was there. And she came home that night just moved because Mary Beth shared, you know, the whole story about how God had called them to adoption, the need over in China, their ministry of Show Hope. And it basically, Donna said when she came home, how could any mother not be moved, you know, sitting in the congregation of all these children that don't have a mom to care for them, especially in China, they call any child that has any kind of a medical need a special needs child. And so there's children over there that need medical attention. And so she came home that night and said, you wouldn't be open to adding another child to our family. And she asked me that because for years when they were little and just in the terrible twos and threes, I just said I didn't want any more children. And so, but she clearly, the Lord had spoken to her. I could see it in her eyes. I could see it in her face. And I said, absolutely. And then she started crying because of the reality that God was calling us into something that was way out of our comfort zone. But our church and the incredible faith-based organizations were right there to walk us through what God was clearly calling us to do. And I remember our pastor from the pulpit, and I think about this, there have been many stories of pastors in the pulpit. Matter of fact, we had clips of David Platt on recently. I remember when he was pastoring in Birmingham, I think there was 140 families in their county there, 140 foster children that needed to be placed. And David just presented that need to the church. And I think within a couple of weeks, all of those foster children were adopted or taken in to homes. And so I think there are enough children in need that every adoption agency should be allowed to help place these children.
I mean, what you're
what would happen is if all of these faith-based adoption agencies were put out of business, which appears to be the desire of the left, either to surrender their distinctiveness of being motivated by their faith, which, you know, a pastor, a church that is going to partner with some of these adoption agencies and promote foster care or adoption, they're going to do it out of their faith. And so they want to be able to communicate with an entity that understands, respects, and will honor that faith.
Right. I, when you look at some of the stats out there, evangelicals are five times more likely in the general population to adopt. And Catholics, Catholic families are three times more likely to adopt. So faith-based adoption is very important. Faith-based entities, you know, to go through this and to understand as a Christian, as a man of faith, a family of faith, you know, we needed to walk through this prayerfully, and we needed faith-based organizations to help us. And there were multiple ones. Our home study was done by a Catholic charity that walked us through. Right. So, and then
they do a lot of work on that.
And even in the foster facility that Josiah was in China when he was sick and ill, was run by a Mormon woman. Another, you know, here's a lady that went over there to teach English to children, saw the need, and started taking these children in her home. I'm forever grateful for Amanda, who went into one of these orphanages, saw Josiah sick, and said, "Can I take care of him tonight?" And because of her connections in her faith community, medicine was sent and all the resources were sent. She took in several children and cared for him. She gave him great care and detailed medical records so that when our time came at 2, when we went over there, we just continue that. He's had 18 surgeries. You know, can you imagine a child in need not having not allowing a faith-based community or agency to help place these children who are in need?
Harold, how has the adoption of Josiah and bringing him into your family impacted your family?
Oh, tremendously. You know, we took our entire family. We took our two children. We even took my sister-in-law over there, and Josiah immediately bonded with the entire family. But our oldest son said, and Hannah has said this to our daughter, the most significant thing we've ever done as a family. Well, you know, when you look back and you talk about this, you talk about it personally, you talk about it on the radio, just about making a difference, wanting, you know, you don't want to just, you want everything that you do in your work and your ministry to make a difference. That was a significant spiritual marker in all of our lives, because you really feel the hands and feet of Jesus when you're going just that one child. And God's got huge plans for Josiah. He's an incredible, incredible young man.
He certainly is. He certainly is. And we're glad to have him as a part of the extended FRC family. Harold, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
And folks, it is National Adoption Month. Be supportive of those adoption agencies that do so out of their faith. That's all the time we have today. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.